To start off this talk, I'd like to ask that you sit as you would if you were meditating. Or at least if you would close your eyes. Into your meditative space, mind, heart, I'll ask some questions. And perhaps you don't have to think about the answer. Perhaps we can think of them as practice questions to see what response occurs from within. It might be in words, it might be in body sensations, it might be in feelings. To end your suffering, what do you have to let go of? And to the best of your ability to imagine, when it becomes time for you to die, for you to be able to die peacefully, what do you need to let go of? For a friend who is dying, for you to sit at the bedside as a peaceful presence, what would you have to let go of? For you to be at peace right now, what could you let go of? And then continuing this way with your eyes closed, take one of your hands and make a fist. Doesn't have to be too hard. Just enough to know that it's a fist. And feel the fistness of the fist. And then paying attention to your hand as you do so. Release the fist. And where did the fist go? Did the fist disappear? Was it annihilated? What replaced the fist? When you release the fist of the heart, where does that holding and clinging go? What replaces it? Letting go is one of the ordinary things that human beings do. We let go every day of something. Through our life, there's many things that we've let go of. Maybe not suddenly, but maybe gradually. Things that you were attached to before. Some of those things you're no longer attached to. When my son was less than two, he was inseparable from his teddy bear. And when he lost it one day, the parents had to go out in the dark in the garden, flashlights, to find it so he can go to sleep. And now that he's grown up, possible he doesn't even remember that teddy bear. He outgrew that attachment. What have you outgrown? What attachments have faded away for you as you matured, became wiser, or as you saw the unsatisfactoriness of the attachment? In your day-to-day life, what are some of the ordinary things you let go of? Completely ordinary. I went for a walk before this talk. I thought about taking a longer walk. But I let go of that so I could be here on time. Letting go of attachments is a very ordinary thing for human beings in all the small ways that it's done. In Dharma practice, we're seeing how thoroughly we could be released from attachments. We're taking a very ordinary thing that, if you think about it, you probably have a reference point, ordinary reference for what it's like, and expanding it, growing it. Completing it thoroughly. And rather than thinking that liberation, enlightenment is some big, strange, unfathomable, ununderstandable, mystical thing. Take the most ordinary letting go that you are familiar with, releasing the fist. And expanding it, filling it out, building on it, growing. And you don't know, we don't know what you'll be required to let go of. None of us do what will come next for us. Things that seem impossible to let go of today might be easy to let go of tomorrow. Our lives can be turned upside down. Some of us live along the San Andreas Fault. From one day to the next, our lives can be changed forever. And things we didn't think we wanted to, could let go of. We got a lot of help. We don't know what life is going to call on us to do and what degree of letting go is wise and necessary as we go along. Just as you don't know what's important for you in this retreat. You don't know what form of letting go is valuable that you've done here at this retreat, either consciously or just the fading away as you got quieter. Like to propose that whatever you need to let go of, whatever your attachment, clinging, you're up against, whether at whatever place, whatever coarseness or refinement of mind you're in, that's the right place to practice. And you don't know what you'll need tomorrow. because we don't know what tomorrow will bring. There's a lovely tale that comes from China, I've been told. I often tell it to children, of a poor farmer who has a son who's a young man. And they have a very poor old horse. And they barely eke out a life on their farm. And the horse somehow gets away up into the mountains. So the young man's son goes up to looking for it. And the neighbors tell the old man, this is terrible for you to have lost your horse. You won't survive. And the old man says, we shall see. And the son doesn't find the old horse, but finds a young, wild, strong horse, young horse up in the mountains, and brings it back. The neighbors tell the old man, oh, you're so lucky. Now farming will be easier. And the old man says, we shall see. The son is taming the horse and rides the horse and falls off and breaks his leg. And of course, the neighbors come by and say, oh, how are you going to manage now without the farm, without your son? And the farmer says, we shall see. And then the king of the land goes to war and recruits all the young men to fight. But his son has a broken leg, so he can't go. The neighbors, of course, say, oh, you're so lucky. And the old man says, we shall see. So on retreat, we shall see. Whatever you're working on, whatever is up for you, it's probably the right place for you. Probably here is where your lessons are. Here's where you can learn the lessons, the wise, skillful lessons of letting go, of release, of freedom. And rather than measuring it by some great idea of enlightenment, or maybe freedom is just a moment away. It's right here, in the next little letting go that you do, or a big one. Maybe you let go of your distractions as I give the talk. In the liberative dependent arising, the condition that supports liberation is, as in the handout, it's listed there as dispassion. Another way of translating the word viraga, the Pali word viraga, is that it can also mean fading away. And this, I think this is a very helpful attitude to have for Dharma practice, is to not be too enamored with letting go as a thing that you do. Certainly, if it's easy, do it. But it happens. Letting go happens. maybe when you don't expect it. Letting go happens when there's a fading away. And the Buddha talked about how our attachments fade over time. The general kind of way people talk about Buddhist practice is as if there's a sudden big bang theory of Buddhism. That's boom. You let go so fully, completely, and then you're good to go forever. But more realistically, there's a fading away, slow process. He likened it to a few things the Buddha did, but one of them was the slow withering away of the stays, the ropes on a boat. The wind, the cold, the heat, the ice. For time, what was once new slowly fades and wears away, and finally, it just gives way and snaps in two. It lets go. Letting go is often a byproduct of seeing clearly, of the ability not only to be familiar with what's happening, but to see clearly, patiently, to be able to hold what's actually happening with equanimity, meaning without being for or against, or without getting caught up in the karmic stream of wanting and not wanting, aversion and grasping. The ability to just watch and be present. Infinite presence. In my early years of practice, when things were challenging for me, I used to get my mantra. One of my mantras was, what if this is forever? And for me, saying that for a few moments, I was like, okay, well, then I can't do anything about it. So I'll just have to be with it. This is it. And that's where I found my peace. But it takes a lot of patience and a lot of dedication. That's hard to come by if there are other things to do. All kinds of great things to do. I'm sure that all of you are doing fantastic things for the world all the time when you're not on retreat. You're all probably ready to be nominated to the Nobel Peace Prize because you're probably not spending any time watching TV or the equivalent, surfing the web. I hopefully say this respectfully, that there's a lot that many people do that easily can seem to distract us or seem more important than this very important work of getting to the bottom of our suffering. And imagine living without suffering. Imagine knowing what that is, to be released, to be freed. It's one of the greatest sources of health and happiness and peace that any human being can experience, to no longer have the agitation of clinging, grasping, craving, to no longer be spinning along in the karmic stream, if you know that, to the degree to which you know that some degree of that letting go and the peace that follows, then you can support other people to do the same. But if you don't know, how can you know what's the greatest good is for people? You would be like a person who was really determined to be a lifeguard at a lake. It's so important to save people who are drowning. And we have to do it quickly and right away. And so the person sets themselves up to be a lifeguard at the lake, but forgot an important thing. Forgot to learn to swim. So the fading way leads to liberation. The fading away corresponds to in the ordinary dependent arising, it corresponds to what's called consciousness. At least that's what the English translations have. And it might have been very unfortunate that we translate vijnana as consciousness. Partly because I think a lot of people have some notion that consciousness is almost the same as who they are. It's like their essence or the I am. The I am-ness that we can feel can be closely connected to being conscious. And consciousness is held up as this kind of ultimate thing, wonderful thing. I read once that it's a relatively new English word in the English vocabulary, 200-300 years old. I read that somewhere in the early 1800s, apparently the people didn't know they were conscious because they didn't have a word for it yet. Maybe they weren't conscious. You have to have a word, you have to have a name. But for the Buddha, whatever vijnana is part of the working of the karmic mind. The consciousness is a doing, it's an activity of the mind. And what it's doing is somehow creating names and appearances. I talked about yesterday. It's with depending on consciousness, there arises the appearances and names. But it turns out that consciousness can fade away too. And consciousness is the way that the Buddha talks about it, not how we intuitively feel about it. It's kind of like the fist. It's there when the hand is clenched. And we can have all kinds of very deep attachments to consciousness, especially when it's kind of like the proof that we're alive. But what happens if the fist of consciousness opens? Where does consciousness go? It kind of doesn't make sense to say it goes anywhere. Just like it doesn't make sense to say the fist went anywhere. It's possible to feel, sense that consciousness can have an ever so slight contraction, solidity, point of reference, tightening, pressure, ever so slight location or that can be held compassionately, kindly, helping it feel safe so that the fist of consciousness can release itself. In a sense, consciousness is the original grasping, the original clinging. And when the time comes, this ordinary letting go that we do all day long, the time will come when consciousness lets go of itself. And it's one of the greatest things. So great and wonderful. This opening of the fist. And a person will no longer be afraid of dying. They might even appreciate that that'll be another opportunity for consciousness to let go of itself. So we sit quietly, and like the old man, it's best not to let the neighbors tell you the meaning of what's happening now. Oh, that's so great for you. You're in some deep samadhi state. Oh, how great. We'll see. Oh, you're like dealing with huge personal issues that are so hard and you're so agitated and so much suffering. And oh, so sorry that happened at the retreat. The old man says, we shall see. You don't know what's important for you. I like to believe that wherever you are at retreat, whatever is happening to you is where you learn the lessons you need to learn. That's the place to learn something about letting go, something about not clinging, something about stepping out of the karmic stream. Even just a little bit. And then to appreciate what you did, to appreciate what you learned, appreciate the alternative to that clinging, the peace, the letting go, the ease, the relaxation. And part of one opportunity in our Dharma practice is to not be so concerned about how far we get in practice, but rather to be concerned about appreciating, enjoying, learning from any degree of freedom that comes our way. Even if it's phenomenally ordinary, mundane, be mindful of what that's like. Don't rush off to the next thing, because you're getting a piece, you're getting a small share of liberation. And if you take time to appreciate that letting go and the value of it, it might make it easier to let go when things get more difficult, and then more difficult, and more difficult. But in your system, your whole physical, mental system will get familiar with this movement of letting go, release, freedom, liberation. And maybe even more important, you'll become an expert at recognizing clinging. And we think that letting go is the important thing. We shall see. Maybe letting go is really a way to get to understand clinging better, grasping better, craving better, so that we're not so easily seduced by the magic show, seduced by the advertisements that it provides, the public relations people that come along with our craving. So, what letting go is available for you right now? What would be helpful, healthy, useful for you to release here and now as you sit here? That you can let go of. And as a returning to that first question, for you to be at peace, what would you need to let go of? To be on this path of mindfulness. It's to journey on the road of letting go, along the road of liberative dependent arising. Where there's faith, gladness, joy, tranquility, happiness, concentration, seeing things as they are, disenchantment, fading away, liberation, we shall see. Please take good care of your practice. Thank you all.